She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And we have something totally different for all of us to think about today. But first, I would like to say our show is made possible to the generous support of Chapman Tucson, doing their share and showing they care. They are very present in the world of giving in our community, in our county. We're appreciative of their support and of our mission and vision. And check them out at chapmantucson.com. They've got lots of green, eco-friendly hybrids and all kinds of great green cars to bring into your home. So thank you, Chapman, for everything you do to support nonprofits, Mrs. Green's World, and a lot of our sports programs. Okay, let's go. The name of our show today is The Game. And I'm really excited because it is a different kind of show for us, and I can't wait to learn more about it from our guest and his role in engaging kids and entire communities in environmental awareness through video games. It is like the thing, and I feel so young and hip, ready to go with this show. Please join me in welcoming the creator of Seeds the Game, Nick Heiming. He is the founder and president of Grow Games Interactive. Nick, it's really great to have you with us.
Likewise, it's good to be here.
So you get to tell a lot of stories, and I think it's always great to start in the very beginning. And from what I read, share the story of us about when you were in Peru and you were volunteering with an organization called Tierra de Niños, engaging kids in building community gardens. And little did that grandmother know she was going to maybe change the course of your life if what I read is true.
Yeah, so my background prior to, I've always been a gamer for my whole life, ever since I was a little kid and first saw Atari 2600.
Oh my gosh.
I just knew that video games were something that appealed to me, and they appealed to a lot of people.
Yes.
And at one point, back during college, I was even somewhat addicted to video games, which I think is a pretty common problem. But I actually, around 3 years after I graduated from college, I quit cold turkey. And the reason I did so was because I had kind of a life-changing moment where I was working for a big food distribution company, and not a particularly... I would say green food distribution
right.
company, but I was making good money and I was doing pretty well with my life. And then the tsunami happened in Asia. And I don't know if you remember the 2004
yes.
tsunami. And that was really a big eye opener for me. And it caused me to actually quit video games, and I quit a whole lot of stuff. You know, I actually quit my job and got them to even pay for me to go and do disaster relief for 3 months in Thailand. And that was what sort of started me off on this whole journey. And after that, I ended up going and working in Mississippi for a whole year after Hurricane Katrina. And it was there that I first got introduced to sustainability. And, before that, I was a pretty conservative guy. And it was at a green building conference that I was first introduced to the concept of doing things a little bit more sustainably. And in order to learn more about that, I ended up going down to South America and hooking up with the organization you mentioned, Tierra de los Niños.
But
and
Nick,
so
I want to stop for a minute because this is a great story. This is a great story, and we have time. So
okay.
It's just great, and I'll forget to ask you if I don't interrupt, and I apologize for that. But you are on this path. You're a gamer. I have friends whose kids dropped out of college for gaming. They were truly addicted. It is a problem. You solved it yourself. I mean, this is a part of the show I didn't see coming. And then the tsunami happens, and I want to be cliche, but a a tsunami happens for your life. What were you seeing and what happened to make that change come about in you? I mean, that's a big deal.
Well, you know, I was making really good money, and I had a lot of material things, and I had a lot of, you know, free time to sit around playing video games or go out to bars and drink, but I wasn't particularly fulfilled in my life. I was feeling pretty down on myself, and so at the time, I had actually gone with my father to a football game. You know, he and I went to USC. And we went to the national championship football game in Florida. And I remember there being a really big disconnect between what I was seeing on the news of this footage coming from Southeast Asia, showing, you know, hundreds of thousands of people dead and people, you know, without homes and still kind of dying in the streets and starving. And then there was my life, which was just so blessed and so full of abundance and just material well-being, and I felt really disconnected from it and really dissatisfied with the fact that I had things so good, and yet there was people that were really suffering.
So thank you for sharing that, really and truly. Great tailgate parties, though.
Yeah. So I brought it up with my dad, you know, as we went and went to this football game, and, you know, he was at a similar place in his life, looking like he wanted to retire and spend more time doing philanthropy and volunteering. And so, you know, he gave me some advice and said, you know, what you should do is before you just go quit your job, you should start using your spare time better. Start using your free time to do stuff that actually benefits the world and stuff that actually makes you feel alive and that you feel is more in alignment with what you're all about. And so I took his advice, and before I burnt any bridges and quit my job, I started, you know, like I said, I quit video games and I started eating better, and I started listening to, you know, music that spoke to me and that, you know, made me remember what was really important in this world. And so that was sort of the catalyst for, you know, 3 months later, I ended up actually getting my employer to agree to pay all my expenses and keep me on salary while I went and did disaster relief.
You are kidding.
It was really an amazing opportunity.
Wow. What, I mean, I am rarely speechless on the show, but what a great personal share and how inspirational to our thousands of listeners that might be in a similar spot. So go ahead. I mean, I am loving this.
Yeah, you know, there's still a lot of situations like that. I mean, I have friends that are in Haiti and Nepal and the Philippines right now cleaning up after disasters. You know, it was just the 10-year anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, and many of my friends went down to the Gulf Coast that I had met down there. But you know, it's really it's a whole different world when you get outside your comfort zone and you start seeing how, you know, people live in other cultures and, you know, without the access to the same kind of resources that you do. But one thing I noticed was that people still play a lot of video games, and there's still a lot of, I mean, even back then, 10 years ago, you know, we used to joke that, you know, we had no idea where people were actually charging their phones because there wasn't even any electricity or running water in some of the communities we'd be in. And yet they'd still be playing little, you know, Bejeweled Blitz on their phones.
Super Mario. I mean, I am so old. My girlfriend and I, when we had our young kids and our husbands and we were staying together, and we were making fun of them for playing Super Mario, and they said, oh yeah, you should come try it. And I don't think we got out of our pajamas for 2 days. I mean, it is addictive. So I really do get it. And it's fun. So go ahead. It's very relatable to millions of us.
Yeah, and it's global. I mean, everywhere I've gone, video game culture has been there. And, you know, as mobile devices get more and more ubiquitous, you know, people are playing video games now in times when, you know, before they'd just be sitting thinking or maybe reading a book, you know, so they're really
kind of
they're everywhere now.
Sometimes, yes, but not your game. And we will get to that. That's what gets me so flippin' excited about your game. So you went on this really journey of introspection and self-discovery and then ended up in Peru. So is that where another level of the change really started to happen?
Yeah, so I went to Peru. This was I was kind of wrapping up being a disaster relief worker, or that's what I thought at least. because after 11 months in the Gulf Coast of the United States, just dealing with really horrific circumstances, lots of toxic mold and asbestos, and you know, completely covered in the detritus of people's entire lives, I started noticing some patterns and actually realizing that a lot of these disasters keep happening in the same places. You know, the worst damage is in these degraded coastal wetlands.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, the places that have the most buildings knocked over tend to be places that, you know, the houses are built on sand and that sort of thing. And I was deciding that maybe I didn't want to keep just rebuilding houses in places that they're just going to fall down again.
Right.
And so I had made a personal decision that I was going to get into sustainable development rather than just, you know, redeveloping after a disaster. Not that there's anything wrong with doing that, but, you know, for me personally, it was starting to seem like a Sisyphean effort. And so I decided to go down to Peru because I had read a book, Guns, Germs, and Steel. I don't know if you've read that one by Jared Diamond. I highly recommend it. It's a very amazing look at like the human journey around the world.
Guns, Germs, and Steel?
Yeah, it's really one of the seminal works of our ages. I highly recommend it.
Okay, I wrote it down.
And so with the climax of that book is in Peru, and they talk about the, you know, 100 or so Spaniards and their few horses and cannons and overthrowing what at the time might have been the largest, most technologically advanced empire in the world, the Incan Empire. And I was reading about some of the stuff about the Incan Empire and their incredible agricultural achievements and their you know, stonemasonry and their textiles. And there was so much interesting stuff about it, and much of it seemed like it had been lost. I really wanted to go down and see for myself. So I bought a ticket and flew down to South America on my own. And that was really
a
somewhat magical journey in itself, because I didn't know anybody down there. I had no itinerary or agenda, but it just seemed like everywhere I went, the path just kind of opened up before me, and I got some really incredible direction on what I needed to do.
And where did you land? What city did you land in?
Well, I flew into Lima.
Okay.
And before I even got off the plane, I already had made a friend with a local Peruvian who was sitting next to me. And she was getting picked up by her sister and her sister's fiance. And she said, "Hey, do you need a ride?" And so they ended up, you know, I didn't have to get a taxi. They gave me a ride. They took me to a hostel and ended up showing me around Lima for the next week, just being kind of my personal guides, just taking me to museums.
Unbelievable. Yes.
Their beach house south of Lima. And, you know, the one day that I wasn't hanging out with my new friends, I wasn't feeling too good. I'd probably eaten something that wasn't too good for me. And I was sitting in my bunk at my hostel and considering just calling it a night. And then I was like, but wait a minute, I'm in Peru. I'm in South America for the first time. And, you know, I need to go out and see what's going on. So I reached in my pocket and I pulled out a little box. And I don't know where I got it. I think somebody just handed it to me on the street. But I opened it up, and there was three coca leaves, which is a very, like, auspicious symbol in the Peruvian, you know, cosmovision. Coca leaves are sort of like tarot cards are for us, or the I Ching is for the Chinese.
Right.
And there was a map. And so I looked at the box actually unfolded into a map with these three coca leaves. And I looked at the map, and I realized it was actually right where I was. It was like a block away, the place that was marked on it. So I walked there, and it was a bar. It wasn't really what I was expecting. And there was some company, you know, there was some company get-together going on there, and I tried to talk to a few people and wasn't really making many good connections. And so I went back to the restroom, and there was a few ladies, you know, maybe about your age, and they're, you know,
so very
middle-aged ladies. Yeah, very young ladies. And they smiled at me, and I went back to the bar, and I said, "Hey, maybe I'm supposed to talk to them." So I went back and started talking to them, and it turned out that one of them owned an eco-village out in the jungle. And
oh my goodness.
I'd never heard of an eco-village. And so I started talking, and she invited me to go out there. So the next day, I bought a ticket to fly out to Puerto Maldonado, Peru, and went to my first eco-village and ended up having a whole amazing journey out there. And that was actually where I was introduced to Tierra de los Niños, which is this amazing program where their goal is to donate 1% of all the land in the world, really, but they're starting in South America, to the children, so that it's in a trust that the children themselves manage.
I can't, as I'm listening, you know, I talk about this with a lot of friends where we think that we're kind of in charge of our own life, and we're really chess pieces being guided by some divine force that's saying, you're getting closer to what you really want to do. This story is amazing to me. So keep going. I just had to reflect on that.
So I went out to the jungle and I had some really amazing experiences. I interacted with some indigenous, plant medicine while I was out there and made some tremendous contacts, so much so that a year later, after I traveled around for a couple months and gone back to the U.S., I decided to fly back down and spend 2 months being certified as a promoter of Tierra de los Niños.
Wow.
And so I went back out and I lived in the jungle for a few months and, went to these remote little villages and was working directly with the kids. And the whole program was really fantastic. It was sort of an asset-based community development program where you sit down with a group of children ages 6 to 12 and you just ask them what they like about their community. And then you ask them what they don't like about it. And then you ask them sort of what their dreams would be if they could do anything.
Right.
And then you start making it real and saying, well, what can you do right now? What could we do tomorrow? What could we start building right away? And then pretty soon you get this beautiful map of what it was that they would like to create. And by the time you're done with it, you do the same process with their parents. And then when you show the parents after that exercise, what
right.
their kids have already come up with, they're just floored. They're usually just crying and, what is it that we can do? And before long, you've built this amazing community garden and clubhouse and playground using all local resources. You barely have to bring in anything from outside. The kids themselves write letters to local hardware stores and nurseries. And, it's a tremendous way to just activate these children. And I was blown away by it myself and ended up going out to Pisco, Peru, where they had just had a 9.0 earthquake and the whole town had fallen down. And I had told myself I was...
I have been there. That is where, Mrs. Green was born there, too, in that very area. So go
really?
Ahead. Yes, really. And went to the Sacred Valley and all of, so just go ahead. This is your story. But I'm loving it. I'm seeing some of these places and the villages. And when you say remote, people in this country have no idea, unless they've experienced what remote is.
Oh, yeah, it can feel like you're traveling back in time.
Yeah, there's no bus that's going to come up. It's by canoe or walking.
Yeah, definitely.
So
well,
go ahead.
When the earthquake happened in Peru, this was after I'd already traveled around there for a few months, and kind of everybody thought that I would be going down there, but at the time I was telling myself, no, I'm doing the sustainable thing now. I'm trying to get out of the disaster game. And so I deliberately went out to the jungle instead of going to the desert where Pisco is. But then while I was out in the jungle, 2 months in, I got 3 emails on the same day from organizations. One was from the organization I was working with, Tierra de los Niños, asking me to go out to Pisco. And then another from an organization that I had worked with in both Thailand and Mississippi, Hands-On Disaster Response. And they asked me if I could come help them in Pisco. And then I got another email from another organization in Pisco that I had worked a little bit with when I was in Mississippi, called the Burners Without Borders, which is kind of like a whole bunch of artists and construction workers that build the city out in the desert for Burning Man.
Right. Oh my goodness.
And they were there too. So in one day I got 3 emails all asking me to go to Pisco. So I said, okay, I guess I'm going to Pisco.
I guess I'm getting a big call from Mother Earth. Okay, you know what? You're not going to believe this. We have to take a break because we're up on the first part of the break. And when we come back, you're going to Pisco. I can tell that. And tell us about what happens next. And I'm feeling that this might be a time for Nick Heimick to come back and do another part of the show, another hour, because I'm loving every minute of it. Everybody, please stay here with me. We're talking with or listening to, at least that's what I'm doing, Nick Heiming. He's the founder of President Grow Games Interactive. He's sharing with us how he got on that path. Lots more very interesting and important information to share. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Arizona time at MrsGreensWorld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the Igloo radio app. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. We are a proud member of the Dream Vision 7, Glimmer Glass, Green Radio Divas, Blog Talk, and Speak Up Radio Networks. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. More Mrs. Green's World next.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And if you just tuned in, make sure that you re-listen to this entire podcast because you won't want to miss a word of it. We are very blessed today to have with us Nick Heiming. He is the founder and president of Grow Games Interactive and oh so much more, creator of Seeds the Game. And when we last spoke a minute ago, you were getting the message, I've got to go to Pisco.
Yes. And so, you know, Pisco, Peru is a really interesting place. You said you've been there?
I have been there.
So it's one of the oldest Spanish colonies in Peru, but it, you know, predates the Spaniards by thousands of years. A very distinct culture, not the same as the Incan, but you know, the interesting thing about it was that the Spaniards actually wiped out all the locals, so there was almost no indigenous people there. It was all Spaniards, and then the servants that they had brought in initially, you know, African slaves, and then after they abolished slavery, then there was a lot of Chinese immigrants that they brought in, and then that fell out of favor, and then they started bringing in indigenous people from other parts of Peru, from the jungle and from the mountains. And so what you ended up with is maybe the most diverse community in all of Peru. Peru tends to be a little bit more homogenous in
yes.
different areas, but Pisco is really just a melting pot. Except here in the United States, we have sort of a cultural imperative towards the mixing of cultures.
Mm-hmm.
But in Pisco, and in Peru especially, there's just really not that kind of a feeling that you need to blend cultures in the way that we do here, that we kind of take for granted. Instead, they kind of just build really big walls and then put barbed wire and broken glass and, you know, electrical fences up on top of them.
Right, right.
But then, you know, those walls were all made out of adobe, and they all fell down in the earthquake back, I think it was in 2007. And so all of a sudden, you've got all these very diverse people that don't really like or get along with each other, you know, face-to-face with their neighbors. And so it was a very difficult place to go and try and do community building, both literally and figuratively. But, you know, I showed up there, and, you know, I don't know if you've ever been to a disaster zone before, but it's really striking when you walk into a community and most stuff isn't standing. There's just piles of rubble everywhere. There's gangs of dogs roving the streets.
Right.
And
really, really,
you know, everybody,
really stark and scary. Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody's homeless. You know, it's not, you know, we have a particular way that we look at homelessness here in the United States, you know, with our history of, you know, the sort of mental illness that tends to be associated with it. But, you know, in a disaster zone, homelessness is just a de facto, you know, regardless of
right.
class or culture or whatever, your house is gone.
Yes, so the great leveler.
I mean, it is.
Yes.
And so I showed up in Pisco, and that was sort of that everybody was just living in tents or these temporary houses that they'd put together. And, you know, it was a dangerous place. Within a few weeks, After I came back in, I think, January of 2008, hands-on, actually ended up cutting and running because they had had 8 muggings in just 2 weeks. So people were literally being accosted in the streets, held up at gunpoint, you know, stabbed with corkscrews, you know, held up for their cell phones and cameras with machetes. I mean, it was a rough area.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I had actually, right before I went out there, gone on a martial arts retreat.
What a life. When are you going to write the book? I mean, you better start writing now because there'll be more than one. I am so serious.
Yeah.
In the beginning. Oh, my gosh.
It was pretty wild. And so we ended up...
It is pretty wild. I'm loving it.
And, you know, I was teaching them, you know, while I was in Thailand, I learned staff, like the bow staff, kind of, you know, spinning a stick around in a somewhat rhythmic fashion.
Oh, my goodness.
I was sharing that with the local kids, and we ended up doing street cleanups. You know, a lot of these kids were graffiti artists, and so we would kind of take the town back street by street. We initially weren't allowed to go out at night when I got there. There was, you know, just too much violence going on. But we started organizing sort of local youth and kids to clean up the streets, and we ended up, you know, working our way all the way to the pier where a lot of the muggings had happened. And what interspersed with you know, the sort of nighttime activities of, you know, these, we call them intercambios, where the kids would come and teach us Spanish and we'd teach them, you know, English or, you know, martial arts.
Right,
they teach
right.
us how to cook meals. You know, in the daytime, I'd go to a little outlying community and I was working with the kids doing the Tierra de los Niños program, you know, asking them what it was they liked about their community.
Right,
which
right.
Time wasn't much because there really wasn't much to
I don't like the shootings. I don't like the dogs. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's really, you know, pretty stark.
Yeah, oftentimes they said, we just want somewhere safe to go.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Because... So, you know, we got to the business of trying to figure out a safe place for the kids to go. And it was around this time where, you know, we had maybe a dozen of these 6 to 12-year-olds that were working on this Tierra de los Niños program with us, that this grandmother came up to me. And so this is a story that you'd initially asked me to share, but, you know,
yeah, but I
kind of wanted to bring us there.
No, I love how you brought us there, and that's what I love about my show. It's not a script. It's really a conversation, and I love that I have free and independent ability to do that because this is the real story.
So, yeah, so this grandmother came up to me, and, you know, she was excited because these dozen kids that were working on this project were really jazzed about it. And you could just see that this is going to be a real beautiful thing that they're building.
Right.
And she said, you know, thank you, Nick, for coming here and for doing this with these kids. They're going to be changed for their whole lives. But that's only a dozen kids. You know, there's millions of kids that aren't benefiting from this, that can't interact with you directly. And, you know, she said, I just got to tell you, it's kind of your fault. And I said, well, why? And she said, well, you know, the junk food that they're all eating and the video games that they're playing and the movies that they're watching with all the violence, those are all coming from your culture. She said, in many cases, that stuff's coming from Southern California. And that's where you're from, right? That's where you went to school. And I said, yeah, you're right.
Yep, it's all
and
my
she
fault.
Said, well, She said, is there anything you could do about that? You know, especially when you go home, can you change that message? Because your culture is like a megaphone and it's just blaring all this stuff to the rest of the world. And it's distracting our kids. It's making it so they don't listen to their grandma. It's making it so they don't want to inherit their culture and their traditions. You know, there's so much that she wanted to share with her grandkids. And she said that they're just not listening because they're so caught up in trying to be like an American.
So can I just ask you a question? Even in that abject poverty in a devastated area, and I'm trying to think about, I'm trying to think about Pisco, and I think we were there literally for a flight change. And our it was really hysterical because we went to Lima, and the flight we were supposed to take to the next destination, the airline shut down that day. It didn't go on strike. It closed. So we had a lot of, you don't just get on another flight in Lima. So I'm trying to really think about that. But with abject poverty, devastation, everything, the kids still had phones to play video games?
You know, phones or internet cafes.
Okay, internet. Okay, different ways to get on and connect. All right.
Yeah, the internet cafes are oftentimes some of the first things that were set up after a disaster.
Right. Okay. So go on. So this grandmother, the grandmothers and the grandfathers, the wisdom carriers, are saying, Nick, mm-hmm. come on, it's your fault, but you can change this. No responsibility here.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, that was a big question to ask. And
at the time,
I couldn't really think of what to do about it. I was kind of racking my brain to think of, well, you know, I definitely don't want to be, you know, part of the problem. And yet here I am, very privileged
right.
North American gringo, you know, and a young man to boot, and I am kind of part of the problem. But what it is that I can do to change that message, you know, because, you know, it's pretty ubiquitous here. You know, it's something that you often hear people decrying domestically. You know, it's not just abroad, but it's definitely something that I saw everywhere that I traveled. You know, our culture has a huge impact on
totally.
The rest of the world.
Totally, totally.
And, you know, I had actually studied media when I was at USC, and I remember, you know, the trends that I was looking at, like the way that print media is kind of going out of fashion, and a lot of newspapers are struggling,
right,
and the
right.
way that radio is all going to the web, you know, podcasts and those
Yay.
Sort of things. And,
yes.
and television is actually on the way out, and it used to be there was, you know, seven channels, and now there's thousands.
Right.
And, you know, even
and
the
people
movie
record
industry.
Things. I mean, it's such a different world. Not even,
yeah.
There's nothing so life-changing that I think we'll ever see in our life, but who knows what's going to happen next. So go ahead. Yes, the world was changing rapidly. And I just have to tell you, my
yeah.
daughter went to USC, and so I mm-hmm. know about that culture. It's a very, there's the haves and the have-nots, and there's lots of have kids there.
Absolutely.
And that's
and, you know,
not
I was
bad.
In
the I mean, look what you're
cinema
doing.
Cinema program.
Yeah.
You know, cinema television, so they were teaching us all about, you know, the entire industry and all the different facets of it. And, you know, it was sort of like the media and the movie and the television industry 101.
Right.
And, you know, I ended up not going into it, but I still had an understanding of it from,
yes.
from my schooling. And, you know, thinking about how chaotic and how, you know, how diverse those types of media streams are, it was hard for me to think of what I could do, you know, little old me. It's hard to break in. You know, everybody's trying to break into
right.
those industries, and how is it that you can actually make a dent and impact the message that's coming out of there? And so rather than try to, you know, make a TV show or make a movie about it, I thought about it. And the thing that was really growing while all these other industries were kind of stagnating was video games. And so and that's something that I actually know, you know,
yes.
because I've been a lifelong gamer.
you had great experience for this job.
Yeah, and so I was looking at it, and you know, mobile gaming is really taking off and growing almost exponentially these days. And, you know, there's something like 2 billion smartphones out there. And, you know, there's just so many people in, you know, playing in that place
right.
that it seemed like that was kind of a no-brainer. If I was going to change the message, you know, I should consider making a video game. And so I got to thinking about it, and I ended up participating in a competition that the World Bank put on. And
wow.
so, yeah, the World Bank back in 2010 did this competition called Urgent Evoke. And I think it's still live. You could actually do a search for me and Urgent Evoke, and you could see my page and all that stuff. And a friend of mine, Yvonne, was actually one of the moderators for it. So she
okay.
was helping run this global game. They had something like 14,000 participants around the world in just about every single country.
The World
so
Bank?
Yes, the World Bank put it on. And
wow.
it was basically them trying to, have you heard of social entrepreneurship?
Totally. That I met you at Social Venture Network.
Exactly.
It's so all
then,
about
so then
that.
You totally understand.
Totally
so
get it.
The World Bank was hearing about all this social entrepreneurship, and they wanted to, you know, find out what it was all about. I imagine they're a pretty, you know, conservative, old school organization. And so, you know, they hear about this big new trend. And so they wanted to use a video game to understand it. And so they did this competition called Urgent Evoke. And it was basically they would take a different topic each week and they'd give you a challenge to, like, think ahead to 2020. You know, this was in 2010.
Right.
And think about what are the big issues and how are we going to solve them? And then think ahead to 2050 and think about what are the things that are going on now that are going to be what made 2050 awesome rather than tragic.
And so did you have to, you know, was it a video format? Because I'm going to look it up. Is that what you had to do to submit?
It was a social media format.
Okay.
So the whole
okay.
thing was a meme site. And it had a skin over it, and you could earn badges and awards, and you could, you know, rank people's contributions based upon their creativity or resourcefulness or, you know, those sorts of things. And so I played the game for a few weeks, and I came in a little late, but within 3 weeks, I think I was actually at the top of the leaderboard. I was actually winning the game.
Why am I not surprised? I'm sorry to say that. You had been
through
quite a bit.
They're also asking stuff that was kind of in my wheelhouse because I had, you know, worked in disaster relief for a while, and that was some of the topics. And, you know, they were asking us to share stuff about that, and I had a lot to share.
Right.
But I also figured out the system. I realized that the way that you got ahead in the game was by you know, getting people to rate what you were doing. But if you just went out and rated a whole bunch of people, which lots of people were doing, that didn't necessarily get them to turn around and rate you. I figured out that what you need to do is actually give them constructive feedback. And so what I would do is I would put something interesting up, and then I would go out and I would see who was online then, and I would go to all of them and give them feedback on what they had shared.
Oh, my gosh.
Actually read what they'd contributed.
Right.
Talk to them about it. And then they would come and see my stuff. They'd give me feedback and rate mine.
Community.
And so before long, that was...
Really?
Yeah. I even wrote a whole guide on how to do that. I said, hey, I'm at the top of the leaderboard. Here's how I did it. And it caused them... I kind of broke their leaderboard. They had to take it down and start it over because everybody started doing what I had been doing after I wrote my walkthrough on it.
Unbelievable.
And, By the end of it, you know, the final competition was to come up with an idea that you thought would change the world. And so that's where I came up with my idea, which at the time I was calling the Global Gratitude Gardens.
Okay.
But what I decided was that if you could make a video game that could use these intrinsic motivating factors that get people addicted to video games, that are why people love playing them. But you could use those to actually encourage them to do stuff out in the real world and to encourage them to especially, you know, grow food and talk about growing food and exchange with other people the stuff that they're growing. Then that would be something that could address a whole lot of different issues. You know, it could be a way to address climate change.
Right.
You know, if regardless of what your feelings are about what could be causing climate change, it certainly seems to be going on. And so, you know,
if you're like a thinking, awake human being, it's like, what do you think? Seriously, that's a tough one for
there's
me.
There's no question that it's happening.
Yes.
You know, and so if it is happening, there's things that you can do, especially if you're trying to grow stuff, you know, you can measure what's going on and find out what climate you're in now. And find out what people grow there.
Right.
You know, and you can even create microclimates, you know, and there's lots of different technologies out there from biointensive to biodynamic to permaculture that allow people to, you know, adapt to their climate and adapt their climate to them. And so I decided that, you know, what we needed to make was a video game, and that video game is called Seeds.
So perfect. And, you know, just you can start telling us about it because we have 2 minutes left till the next break. And then we were going to have to hear about the game and where it stands. And I have questions, a couple of questions that I'd like to, you know, be able to fit in and not essential, but, you know, some of the things around how do you design a game? And I really did a lot of looking at it and mm-hmm. the interactive and how you get points to the extent that I could. So one of the things I want you to think about before we're going to go to break is how do you design a game that can be used by kids in inner city Harlem and yet use the same game by kids that are on a farm in Iowa. You know what I mean? I'm sure you've thought of it, and I'm sure you have answers, but I'm very, very excited about what you're going to do and hoping we can figure out how to promote. I just think it's wonderful. I want to get the game and do it with my grandchildren. And they're, 11 and 14 and really cool. And so let's hold that thought. I am a grandmother. Everybody stay here with us. Nick Heiming, the founder and president of Grow Games Interactive. We'll be right back. Nick, it's so great to have you with us.
Mrs. Green's World's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the Earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. And as always, we're bringing you a great show with an incredible guest, raising environmental awareness through video games. Our guest is Nick Heiming. He's the founder and president of Grow Your Games Interactive. And before we go on to Nick, I just want to do a shout out. My team reminds me to do this, to have it come from the lips of Mrs. Green personally. We can use your help. We want to remain free and independent. You hear that promo during the break. And I would love it if you'd go to my website. You can do $5 a month, you can do $1 a month, but we want to remain strong, solid, increase our reach, and the way that you can help us do that is by becoming a sustaining member of Mrs. Green's World. We'd love to have you, and you get those super fun, only for sustainers, corny videos by Mrs. Green herself. You'll love seeing them. So, Nick, let's go. So, we're almost at the game.
Yeah. Okay, so the idea behind the game, initially we wanted to make a simulator where you'd actually get to experience, all right, the different aspects of growing food. But then we realized that that wouldn't necessarily be fun, and that would be a really complex thing to have to interact with. So, we've been working on this idea. That was back in 2010 when we first came up with it.
Oh, my gosh.
And we've actually just finished our first prototype that we're testing out. And so it's really exciting. When I met you, we were still hammering out the last details pulling together the team. But now we're alpha testing. So
I saw that, and it's like your enthusiasm was contagious, and I gave your card to Kelly, and SVN was in the spring. I mean, it's months ago now. It's just unbelievable to me. Okay, go ahead.
So the idea behind the game is, initially what we're creating is a game that you play not just on your phone, but in real life. So, it's similar to if you've ever played a role-playing game. You get your quests or your missions. Only in this case, the quest can be something just like go outside and take a picture.
Right, right, right.
Find something that you love.
Find
and
a bug.
Take a picture of it.
find a bug.
Find something that you've never seen before that you're not sure what it is, and take a picture of that.
That's an interesting one. Love that. Okay.
So that's the entry-level stuff, going and checking in somewhere, like a community garden or a local farm or a farmer's market or, a seed library. There's lots of different locations that'll be in there. Or if you can't find one in the game, you can actually add it to it. So you can say, hey, I notice you don't have this beautiful local garden in there. So you can get points for adding that. So we're rewarding people with these seed points for doing stuff in their communities or in their own gardens. And so, eventually you can, create your own gardens. You can plant a raised bed or create a little nursery or even build an aquaponics system or, plant a food forest. So there's a whole range of activities that people can do. And once you do them, you will document them. So you take a picture and you share that on your Facebook or your Google Plus or your Twitter or Instagram or whatever social media that you're using.
Snapchat.
And we're going to be able to, exactly. And we're going to be able to track, based upon the tags that people are using, how much traction they're getting, how much response they're getting from their friends and from their family. So as people give you thumbs up and give you feedback, we're actually keeping track of that, and that's going into a person's score. So the more likes that you get, the better you do in the game.
Right, and the more points you get and whatever. Is it something, let me just ask you this, is it something that's fun to do with someone else? Like I thought when reading about it that, like, for my grandson, who is, he'll be a gamer, he'll be writing programs for game, or whatever that is called. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's so brilliant. Would it be fun for us to do a project together where he's the person that has the game?
Absolutely. We're making it so that there's tons of encouragement for, especially for young people, to do it with their parents or with their grandparents,
right,
or with,
right,
you know, their friends. But really, anybody that plays the game is going to be encouraged to do it as part of a team. And that's going to be a big part of the play, is to create these, you know, teams of people doing a particular mission, or even ongoing, like, guilds and teams for a neighborhood or for a city.
And
you know,
schools.
People that share,
I mean,
common
green
interest.
Clubs and schools. I mean, there's so many applications for it. They're infinite. My mind went crazy about how people will be able to use this to change their lives and help with climate change. Like, seriously, it's all about raising awareness.
And you know, existing organizations are going to be able to use this too. We're creating an engagement engine that'll allow them to actually create quests and missions. So if you're a master gardener that's running a community garden, you'd say, hey, my compost pile needs to be flipped twice a week. You know, and kids can come and do that,
yes.
and then they'll get a multiplier if they do it with their friends.
Right. I love it. Love it.
As people are earning these seed points, you know, some of it's going to be just for esteem and reputation in the community, but we actually want these to have some value. So one of the things that makes us different is, aside from giving people missions in real life, we're actually going to be giving them real rewards for it. So we're talking to seed companies and to tool manufacturers and to, you know, local hardware stores and nurseries and you know, people that make weather sensors and,
right,
soil sensors,
unbelievable,
and, you know, irrigation supplies. And they're saying, hey, you know, if you get my product into the hands of somebody that's doing awesome stuff in their community, that's doing something beautiful and creative, or that's, you know, being of service to their community, or that's contributing to citizen science, I'll give my stuff away to them. And so there's a lot of people that have really amazing products, like, you know, heirloom and organic seeds and, you know, amazing tools that they'll literally put in the hands of our best players.
I just hear, you know, the ripple effect. It's one big ripple effect, and it goes on. The list goes on. I mean, I'm not just saying that. The potential for this to flip things, you know, on scale and get kids excited instead of about the games that are fun but don't have a really greater purpose in many cases. They're just fun, which is not bad, but oh my gosh, I'm very excited about it.
Well, and that's why we founded Grow Games, because we feel like this is a trend that's going to only be getting more and more prevalent.
Right.
Of games that actually get people outside and interacting with their community and, you know, making meaningful connections with each other. And so, you know, we're committed to building seeds, but to also be doing this in a variety of different industries, you know,
right,
whether it's social enterprise or, you know, the maker movement, or, you know, helping people with, you know, learning languages and those sort of things. There's just so much that people could be doing, you know, out in the community together. And
right,
we'd like to be a catalyst for that. And so that's why we created Grow Games and founded it as a benefit corporation. So,
so
know,
it's
we're one
a
of those
B-Corp?
Social ventures. It's a, we're reincorporating in Delaware, actually, as a public benefit corporation this week, although we have been a B-Corp here in California for the last year and a half. We're just planning on going international, and so our lawyer is advising us to be in Delaware so we can target some impact funding from abroad.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable how that all works too, the complexity of that. And you have to be pretty business savvy to know those other things too. And were you a part ever of the Bridge program at SVN? Because a lot of times I have guests on, they said, oh yeah, I went through the Bridge program for Social Venture Network. And I just want to say, you know, baby, look at them now. But it seems to me like that's not something you probably need to do.
You know, I wouldn't mind doing that. I did just get accepted to a startup accelerator called the Startup Leadership Program.
Okay.
And our first meeting tonight. So,
okay. I'm writing that down too.
That's a new thing for me.
Okay.
Now, getting back to seeds, though. So, you know, what I've been talking about right so far has mostly been sort of the real life game, the engagement engine that people are going to be playing.
Right.
And that's going to be our launch product. That'll be the first thing that people are able to do with it. But it's not going to be the only thing that we do. We're hoping, and this is, you know, pending the success of our initial project as well as, you know, resources becoming available. But we'd also like to make games that are actually video games people play on their phone. So we don't want to completely be, you know, just a live game, but we also want to create games that are more similar to the type that most people think of when they think of video games.
Right,
like
you know,
Angry Birds or Farmville or that kind of tower defense type of game.
I'm sorry that I know all those.
Yeah, you know, they're
it's okay.
They're pretty common and they're fun. People,
yes,
you know,
they're
so ubiquitous because people really enjoy them. And what we'd like to do is make games like that and use the same mechanics and formula that people are familiar with, but we want to put a little tweak on it. You know, we want to make them more interactive. So, you know, are you familiar with like a tower defense game?
Yes.
So the basic premise is there's an evil army coming to invade your castle.
Yeah, I think
so. You got to build up. You got to build up towers to stop them from getting there.
Right.
So what we would do is make a flower defense game. So you've got pests coming to invade your garden. And so you have to plant flowers that attract beneficial insects that are like pirate bugs and assassin beetles and damselflies and dragonflies. And then those good bugs then go and fight the bad bugs and prevent them from coming and destroying your garden.
I love it.
And so you actually learn about integrated pest management while you're playing the game.
Love it. I do. And it sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Integrated pest management does not, but this kind of game does.
Yeah. So, and it would tie into the other games. So we'd get people to play these games, and most social media games, you only play for say half an hour, 15 minutes before they cut you off and make you go bug your friends and family with invites.
Right. Right.
But we're not going to do that. We'll cut people off, but we'll then send them out into the garden and say, okay, you were just playing this pest game. Go see if you can find some of these good bugs out in your garden. Or can you find some of the flowers that attract them?
Got it.
You know,
got it.
And then we got people doing citizen science. So, you know, after they've planted their gardens and they're just tracking their progress and doing their weeding and, you know, doing their watering, they can actually be making ongoing observations and, you know, contributing to a global best practices database. So, you know, we're actually documenting all of our players' progress around the world and encouraging them using these games that they're going to be coming back to get them back out there in their gardens and making observations.
Right.
And over time, we'll be able to really address things like the loss of biodiversity that's been going on at an accelerating rate, or, you know, global hunger or climate change. So all of those things are things that we're feeling like this game could be a tool for addressing.
Uh-oh, do we lose you?
No, I'm still here.
Okay. I just thought there was a pause, and I thought, I'm listening for every word. And it gives me a great opportunity to ask a question, and it's kind of like the end, but we only have about like 8 more minutes left. Mm-hmm. How are you going to start, like, what's the marketing strategy for people to be able to hear about it? Because I believe the more I read, the more I looked, is that to know about it is going to be to want to start engaging. And how are you going to, I mean, I'm sure you have a plan, and maybe we don't have to go into, you know, it right now, but are you going to go to gaming? You know, I know they have like trade shows, they have gaming shows where you go and show that. What's your rollout strategy?
So our rollout strategy is basically to use the fact that we're creating a place within our ecosystem for existing organizations. So there's community gardens out there right now that could use a tool like this to rally the troops, so to speak,
yes.
and to get people to come out. And there's all kinds of sustainability and permaculture and advocacy organizations out there that are already doing the things that we're trying to encourage people to do. But they could use help doing it. And I know this because I've founded community gardens and
totally.
I've worked with a lot of these organizations.
And it's not typically their forte either. So it's another realm that will be such a gift.
It can be really tough. And, you know, if you try and promote things like sustainability workshops, which I did for 5 years using Facebook, you get buried. unless,
yes.
unless you're paying money, it can be really, really hard
really
to reach
daunting.
The people that
right.
want to know about what you're doing. And it would break my heart when I would find out that people that would have loved to have gone just never heard about it, even though
right.
I was, you know, felt like I was shouting to the heavens.
Right, I get
so
it.
So we're going to be a promotional tool to help people connect with the people that are into that kind of thing. And so our rollout strategy is to partner with all these organizations and give them the tools, and during our beta testing, actually, you know, help them become fluent with what we're creating and already have a bunch of awesome, compelling stuff online when we do finally launch.
Right.
So
got it.
We're talking to eco-villages and community gardens and seed libraries all around the U.S. and really all around the world. And they're just chomping at the bit to be able to play with this once we build it. So,
I know. I want to, too. Okay.
So we're busily, you know, developing and cracking away at it so that we'll have something for them to play with and for their existing users and potential future users to use as well.
And when you think about it, when I did my research, I mean, the massive content, magnitude, scope of the project, you have to include geographic information systems. And I took this right from the research I did. Mobile application mm-hmm. development, TV and film production, social action gaming, community organizing, sustainable living education, adaptable development platform. I just think it's like, it's so massive, and you have to incorporate all of those to ensure its success. What a big project.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're lucky because we have a really amazing team. I don't know if you've ever seen the television show Hit Record.
No. I'm going to write
also,
it down.
It's also a Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who's a pretty famous actor. He was on Third Rock from the Sun. And
okay.
Like Robin and Inception. He came up with this idea for a global community-driven like media program, like making television shows and songs and movies with, you know, completely crowdsourced, just from the crowd.
Love it.
And
gosh.
He built it. One of the movers and the shakers, the guys who actually is a big reason why that project worked, their chief technical officer back when they launched, is actually our chief technical officer.
Oh,
so he was able to create this huge global content creation and distribution network. And, you know, now he's sort of the one that's the primary developer for us right now. And so
that's
we're really
a big
fortunate
deal.
To have
that's
such
really,
a talented guy on
yeah,
board.
That's
you know,
really
his
good
last
deal.
Project. His name is Michael Everett. He's really a off the charts genius.
And you just
his
have
last
to,
project was to create a project with the Department of Transportation. It's the most accurate current real-time weather simulator that there's out there with, you know, sensors on thousands of DOT vehicles. It's really incredible.
You're playing with the big dogs, and I know that you're not going to believe this, but we have about 1 minute left, and I have to forward promote the next week's show. We have a Down to Earth with Mrs. Green that we do on Tuesday night to spotlight great things going on in the Southwest. My friend Nate Aries is going to be there. He's the founder of Prep and Pastry, and he's building locally focused, sustainable businesses and very successful with his young team. And then Maria Rodale, who's chairman and CEO of Rodale Inc., and she's co-chair of the Rodale Institute board. Talk about doing amazing things about organic gardening and having global impact. And Nick, president, founder of Grow Games Interactive, good luck with Seeds the Game. I'm so glad that you're on the show, and we will have you back if you want to come back and tell us how it's going 6 months down the road. Let's stay connected.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. What a great story and what a twist it took for me. Everybody, make it a great green week. Thanks for being a part of Mrs. Green's World.